This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:06 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We were talking a little bit earlier about potentially seeing tasers being used by our police force. If you have any thoughts you'd like to share, keep them coming. We will get to those messages a little bit later. But first, we're going to start the hour by talking about Singapore's elections and its implications on Singaporean politics. So to recap, to nobody's surprise, the People's Action Party won with 61% of the popular vote and 83 out of 93 parliamentary seats. And the Workers' Party, which is the opposition, retained all 6 seats and, here's the small surprise, won 4 new ones. So while Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong has said that he's satisfied with the results, analysts are a bit more circumspect. They actually see them as unsettling for the PAP. And for a few reasons. So for one, it was their second worst performance since Singapore gained independence in 1965. Analysts had projected a more comfortable majority given the government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. And the results also cast a doubt on the popularity of Prime Minister Lee's designated successor, Heng Swee Keat. For instance, he and his team only won 53% of the popular vote in the East Coast constituency against young faces from the opposition. And the fact that he had to contest a seat different from his original one was also seen as a weakness. And of course, this also happened against the backdrop of COVID-19. The elections took place amidst the pandemic. So we just wanted to kind of turn our eye to that, see whether there are any lessons or parallels that we can draw, and also understand why the results turned out the way they did, and also what it means for the PAP and Singapore's politics moving forward. We are now crossing over, therefore, to Eugene Tan, Associate Professor at the School of Law at the Singapore Management University. If you would like to share any thoughts on this, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Eugene, thank you so much for speaking with us. So what are your initial impressions of the election results? Were you surprised by the outcome?
Well, I think the election results are something which, Singaporeans, I think, would be proud of. I think voters were able to send very nuanced messages, to the ruling party and to the opposition. And in many ways, the voters also demonstrated that much as they appreciated, the ruling party's technocratic abilities, they too would also want the government to be more empathetic, to focus more on how they governed. So I think here the voters have come up with, in my view, a good outcome. As to whether, I was surprised to some extent, right? I think not many people expected a second multi-member seat, or what we call the group representation constituency, to fall, to the leading opposition party, the Workers' Party. But I think, in the end, when you look at the overall results, the fact that there was a nationwide swing against the ruling party, I think that was not unexpected, particularly, given that the results in 2015, where the PAP won close to 70% of the popular vote, that result came under exceptional circumstances, right? That was the year that Singapore celebrated its 50th year of independence, the Golden Jubilee, as well as, there was wide regard, for the ruling party as a result of the passing of the founding Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew.
And was there any indication that things might go in this direction during the campaign period itself?
Well, the PAP has never been very good on the campaign trail. I think for a variety of reasons, the PAP are not as good street fighters, if I can put it that way. They were constantly responding to opposition attacks. Although it must be said, I think in this year's campaign, they were able to put across, their key messages, right, which was primarily about jobs, in light of, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic. But they were often on the defensive, and very often, you know, voters did react, you know, to what they perceive to be unfair campaign tactics, you know. So whether that was what voters felt were examples of character assassination, or the fact that, you know, the ruling party were making rather grand claims, for example, about what the MPs would do if they were elected. I think voters perhaps, you know, didn't respond well. It was an intense campaign, and given that, you know, the ruling party is not so good on a campaign trail, I think as the campaign wore on, you know, I think it was becoming evident, you know, that in some of the keenly contested seats, you know, the PAP machinery, you know, didn't find, you know, that the reception, you know, that they would have wanted, you know, that would have enabled them, you know, to poll better. So in the end, you know, I think when you look at the campaign period, given the sort of struggle that they underwent, I think the results in that sense, you know, were probably not surprising. But I think it must be noted that, you know, the PAP didn't have a disastrous campaign. I felt that they did campaign better this year compared to previous general elections. But I think, you know, they could have gone beyond, you know, just focusing, you know, on their election manifesto, you know, particularly in light of voters, you know, who wanted to hear, you know, what the PAP wanted, you know, because they asked voters for a strong mandate. And if you are asking voters for a strong mandate, you need to be able to explain, you know, why this strong mandate was needed. But I don't think they did enough about that. You know, they didn't share enough about their plans. So I think the messaging, you know, probably didn't reach, you know, didn't get to where it should have been.
And before we dive into really the politics of the situation, this is, of course, the first of Singapore's elections to ever take place during a pandemic. Can you take us through the process? I mean, what was your experience like when it came to voting?
Well, so obviously, you know, when you have a general election in the midst of a pandemic, which was, of course, somewhat controversial, you know, the opposition accused the ruling People's Action Party of being irresponsible, you know, of putting voters' health at risk. I think in the end, you know, when Parliament was dissolved last month, it had only about 6.5 months left to its term. And given that there was uncertainty as to how long the pandemic would last, I think it was a judgment call, right? It was a judgment call on the part of the government to decide when to go to the polls. And of course, they would have to accept, you know, whatever consequences, you know, that may flow, you know, from that particular decision. But certainly, you know, the government attempted, you know, I think they did go out of their way, you know, to ensure that voters would feel safe, you know, heading out to cast their ballots. And before that, you know, to be able to take part in some of the campaign activity. The other important consideration, you know, that the government had was that parties, you know, would be able to campaign effectively, right? Of course, not campaign in the usual way as in previous elections, but certainly be able to get their message out. You know, so in that regard, you know, there was more airtime on free-to-air TV, you know, for parties to put their messages across and for them to introduce their candidates and to hear their plans. So one of the restrictions, of course, was we didn't have the mass rallies, you know, which is always a highlight of every general election. But you could imagine when you have crowds of thousands, you know, without and without the ability to be able to enforce safe distancing, election rallies, you know, were not permitted. They could do community walkabouts, door-to-door campaigns, you know, but they had to be masked, the people who are doing this activity, and the delegation size could not could not be larger than five members. On polling day itself, last Friday, there were temperature scanning. You know, we had to use hand sanitizers. Before we handled our identity cards and polling cards. And initially, you know, there were also the requirement for voters to be wearing gloves. But I think that slowed down the queue very significantly, and then that was done away with, and instead, voters had to apply hand sanitizers, after they had voted.
On the line with us today, we have Eugene Tan, Associate Professor at the School of Law at the Singapore Management University, talking to us about the recent outcome of Singapore's general elections. If you'd like to share any thoughts, ask any questions, do get in touch. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be continuing our conversation after this. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity, BFM 89.9.
It is 7:17 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We're talking today about Singapore and the recent results from their general election. On the line with us, we have Eugene Tan, Associate Professor at the School of Law at the Singapore Management University. So Eugene, let's dive right in. What were the key issues for voters in this general election?
Well, for the ruling party, they attempted to frame the issues, around the election manifesto, right? Which was our lives, our jobs, our future. So very much, attempting to focus voters' attention on the COVID-19 pandemic, but also, the economic emergency, that we are perhaps in the midst of as a result of, the widespread disruption, caused by COVID-19, to trade, investment, tourism, and many other types of economic activity. The opposition, on the other hand, sought to look at issues, a wider range of issues, so whether, they related to COVID-19, so the idea of they too had their own proposals on how to deal with the economic downturn, so whether that ranged from unemployment benefits to sort of allowance, for the elderly, and also to issues, such as immigration, public housing, lease decay. And the more importantly, I thought they focused quite a fair bit on how the government ought to govern, and that, the government should also focus on post-material issues. And by that, I mean issues that do not relate to bread and butter concerns, but, for example, as to how society ought to be organized, how society can be fairer and more just and more compassionate, how do we deal with, the income gap, the income inequality, and the sort of values, that should guide us as we remake Singapore for the post-COVID world. So there were a variety of issues, that were raised, particularly by the opposition. And because here we're talking about, a government that has governed Singapore since 1959, many of the issues, can be attributed to PAP's policies. So there were a lot for voters to chew on.
And with that said, I mean, some analysts are saying that despite the fact that it was a victory and an overwhelming one, the PAP should still be wary of it because the opposition did make significant gains that cast doubt on the government's succession plans. Can you maybe walk us through why the results might have disappointed the government?
Okay. Well, one is, in terms of the popular vote share, the ruling party polled slightly in excess of 61%. This isn't their worst, because in 2011 they polled 60.1%. But if you were to look at the number of seats, that they lost 10 seats, whereas in the previous parliament, which had four fewer seats, they lost six seats. So in a way, in many ways, the Workers' Party made significant inroads, because in winning the additional four seats, the PAP lost, three office holders in the multi-member constituency that they contested in. So to me, the loss of a second multi-member seat is significant, because it does suggest that, what many would have thought would be a sort of impregnable fortress, doesn't seem so invincible after all. And there was that general vote swing against the ruling party and many of the fourth generation leadership. So these are the leaders that are slated to take over from the current generation of leaders. Many of them also did not poll as well as they would like to. And so that raised question about whether, the next generation of leaders have done enough, to earn the trust and confidence of Singaporeans. So I think in the end, the results would certainly disappoint, the PAP. They had sought, a strong mandate, but the leader, Mr. Lee Hsien Loong, who is also the Prime Minister, acknowledged that and said that, what they got was a clear mandate. I think they wanted both a clear and strong mandate. But I think what's really important now is, how do they react? How do they respond, to the change in voting?
And there's also been a lot of attention given to the Worker Party's victory at the Sengkang constituency. Could you walk us through why this is important?
Well, this is a very significant victory. So prior to this, the Workers Party had won a multi-member seat, Aljunied constituency, and one single member seat, Hougang. In winning, Sengkang, which I think not many people had expected, and I think certainly not the party themselves, although towards the end of the campaign, they felt that the ground was shifting, but it wasn't sure whether there was enough for them to win. The fact that the most inexperienced team of the Workers' Party was fielded in Sengkang, that they were able to defeat People's Action Party team, that in that four-member constituency, the PAP fielded three office holders, including a cabinet minister. And for, the Workers' Party team that was regarded as being the most inexperienced because out of the four candidates, three were contesting in the general election for the first time. That is indeed a significant victory. And so it raises questions about whether the Workers' Party is now able to take on the ruling People's Action Party, even in group representation constituencies where the Workers' Party did not feel, their strongest teams. So I think, much will be analyzed, with regard to this famous victory of the Workers' Party in Sengkang constituency. And I think, the ruling party will certainly be examining, what went wrong, because they certainly wouldn't want more multi-member seats, to fall to the opposition. How the PAP has played the game is, very often in these multi-member seats, they would be helmed, by a cabinet-ranked minister. And so, if you have in a multi-member seat where the PAP is defeated, that would mean, the loss of, cabinet ministers and perhaps one or two other junior office holders.
And finally, Eugene, what were the revelations from this election in terms of the youth vote in Singapore? And what did it say about political up-and-comers?
I think its accent has been on, in terms of, politics, in the last decade or so, the accent has been on young people. That partly seeks to recognize, the fact that, more than half of the electorate in Singapore are people are people born, after independence. So a large segment of these people, would not have seen the transformation of Singapore in the way that the PAP like to describe it, from third world to first world in one generation. So in that sense, the younger voters are generally not seen to be, to be enamored, with the ruling party, and which also means that, they are prepared to give the opposition a fair hearing. And so when you look at Sengkang, you know, the demographics of that particular constituency, there were about 60% of the voters there who aged 45 years and below, you know, so people who whose careers were perhaps, you know, not quite established yet, you know, many young families. And so, you know, this segment of the electorate had, in a way, quite different concerns, you know, from their parents. You know, obviously, bread and butter issues matter to them, you know, because they have young families. You know, jobs, of course, matter to them. But they, too, were also concerned with issues that go beyond bread and butter. You know, so, for example, how the government governs. You know, does it govern with empathy? You know, does it adopt a paternalistic approach? You know, they're also concerned about how society is organized. So all these, I think, made, you know, the youth vote, you know, an important vote bank. And parties that could connect well with them are likely to be able to secure, you know, their ballot. And the initial analysis seems to suggest, you know, that in Sengkang, the opposition team, because it comprises, you know, people in the same age group as the majority of voters in Sengkang, that they were better able to connect with voters, their message, you know, resonated far better than the ruling parties, and then that contributed to a famous victory. So what it means in short, you know, is that there seems to be this generational shift, you know, so while bread and butter issues will always remain, you know, basic concerns in a general election, they are not the only concerns anymore. That means that parties will have to address their minds, you know, to other issues, you know, other than bread and butter. And because the PAP has, you know, tremendous capability, you know, in dealing with, you know, what we would call bread and butter issues, right? The economy and all. You know, it means that, you know, they now have to also develop their forte and expertise in post-material issues that go beyond bread and butter, which could require, you know, the ruling party to be more empathetic, you know, less paternalistic, and to focus on how they govern. You know, there is not enough for them to govern well, but how they govern. You know, do they have the trust and confidence of the people? You know, that these are important considerations for young voters as well.
Eugene, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Eugene Tan, Associate Professor at the School of Law at the Singapore Management University, giving us some insights on the polling results of Singapore's election last Saturday. If you'd like to weigh in on the outcome or whether there are any lessons or parallels for us to draw, I mean, after all, the government did still end up with a supermajority, but the opposition did make inroads, which I think is a familiar story somewhat to Malaysia over the last decade. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.